Welcome to Psychic Elephant Radio. Tonight is the mid-season premiere of Only the Monsters. Chapter 7, The Fight. Please enjoy. The flares continue to bombard the night sky, and more council troops become visible.
There's too many of them. We gotta get out of here. David! Are you listening to me?
David hasn't moved nor talked. He stands almost frozen, staring at the approaching soldiers. In the dim light between flares, a mysterious creature is rapidly approaching. Tall and lean with razor-sharp claws, the flare once again lights the sky and the Wendigo is in plain view. Just in time for Melissa to see it eviscerate three heavily armed soldiers. May turns to the pair and howls again before running towards the closest soldier and ripping off his head, hurling it at another soldier. The Wendigo moves with May, protecting her flank. They fight in tandem until May howls again at the beast. The surrounding soldiers begin to run towards David and Melissa.
You gotta snap out of it. It's a fight. You're gonna have to fight. Come on, man.
David continues to study the approaching soldiers and unsheathes his sword. With surgical precision, he beheads two, then three, then four soldiers in as many moves of the sword. The outburst of raw carnage slows the soldiers' advancement. Melissa is moving quickly, dodging attacks and slashing away with her saber. She's not landing many kill shots, but hacking off hands and arms, leaving them for the roving Wendigo. Two soldiers begin firing flares at the Wendigo, disorienting the creature. They're attempting to drive him out of the stadium. May charges toward them and gets to the first soldier as he is quickly trying to reload the flare gun. Her momentum takes him to the ground. She rips out his throat with her teeth before finishing him with her hatchet. The second soldier fires a flare missing May by inches and landing in the tall, dry grass. The flares have caught the majority of the field on fire, and it's spreading quickly. In the glow of the fires, the Wendigo devours the soldier immediately. David is unfazed by the fires, and he continues to strategically thin the opposition. The remaining soldiers are the oldest and fastest. They concentrate on driving May and the Wendigo into the fire, trapping them. David moves to help them, but is intercepted by the platoon commander. He's old, twice David's age, and much faster and stronger than David. Melissa sees a chance to escape and yells,
"I'll be right back. I got an idea."
The commander grips his sword and speaks to David.
"They say if you want something done right, you got to do it yourself."
David looks confused as he watches Melissa run away.
"Is that what they say?"
The commander strikes at David and just misses him. David counters but is blocked by the commander's sword. He pushes David back several feet and attacks again, slicing his shoulder. After recomposing himself, David attacks, slicing the face of the powerful Strigoi. They continue to lunge at one another, nearly missing kill strokes every time. May and the Wendigo are holding strong, but the fire is burning uncontrollably. With exhaustion starting to set in, this might become their fiery grave. David looks towards the rusty old gate and sees a powerful set of headlights and starts to grin. Melissa rams the gate at full speed, knocking it down. Then she drives full bore into the remaining council guard, pinning several under the transport. They scream in agony. The commander is distracted by the chaos and David capitalizes, removing the Strigoi's head with a quick strike. He runs to the transport as May rips apart another guard. Melissa starts to open the door of the nearly destroyed transport and gets ready to run.
"We gotta get the hell out of here!"
May and the Wendigo run towards the open gate. Melissa steps over the pinned guards that are still slashing at her. Her forehead is smashed open from hitting the steering wheel.
"Stop! Hit the oh shit button!"
"What?"
"The big red button."
Melissa hits it and jumps out of the way as the transport fires the large harpoon-like stakes towards the ground, impaling the trapped Strigoi. It then lowers the center of gravity, cutting them in half. They turn and run towards the open gate. They reconvene in the parking lot where May shifts back into her human form. The three, covered in blood, stand silently while the Wendigo watches the gate for stragglers.
"Game Commission will be here within the hour to take care of the fire. They're not big fans of the council, so they probably won't report it."
A man's scream comes from the gate. One of the few remaining guards is stumbling out, completely engulfed in flames. The Wendigo rips him apart and devours him. A few more follow, all meeting the same gruesome fate.
Your friend seems nice.
You should have seen him 50 years ago.
David laughs.
I need to get back to Milwaukee. If the council finds out I was a part of this, they'll come after us. I gotta warn my pack.
Thank you for helping us tonight and giving us a starting point.
We should probably get the hell out of here too. Yes, thank you, May.
Listen, if you guys want to see this through, head west to O'Hare. Find Anders, and he'll help you.
Agatha scurries back to her office, takes a deep breath and shuts the door. She sits at her desk and pours a glass of top-shelf synth and mixes some bourbon in it. She stares off in the distance and sips her drink. Theodore enters and asks,
Did you confront him?
I did, and it wasn't him. He's just lazy, but not the traitor.
Well, your head is still attached, so I assume he took it well.
We need to figure this out, or it'll be both our heads.
There's a loud knock at Agatha's door.
Come in.
Baron Fletcher enters the office.
We have a problem, ma'am.
What is it?
Baron Fletcher looks concerningly at Theodore.
We should speak in private, ma'am.
It's okay.
Baron Fletcher pauses, looking at Theodore with concerned eyes. He continues.
My surveillance team just reported in. The entire platoon is dead.
Agatha gasps.
How is this possible?
It's unclear. My men arrived after the fight. Charred bodies were everywhere. All council guards. The archives transport was recovered but completely destroyed. I guess it wasn't a good idea to give them a state-of-the-art vehicle.
Charred?
It appears whoever is responsible torched the stadium.
What about my team?
No signs of them, ma'am.
This smells like something bigger than my team flipping.
Possibly a cover-up, really hard to tell.
Agatha takes a drink from her blood-laced bourbon.
So I'm to believe that the two paper pushers massacred an entire cell?
Doubtful. Not without help. It could have been the Mistaken.
Looks like they made new friends.
All the transports are accounted for, so they must be on foot.
Theodore gets very snarky.
If they're still alive, my guess is a band of the Mistaken killed them, then took their transport, and probably killed your amateur hit squad too.
Baron Fletcher is getting increasingly irritated.
You wouldn't last a second outside these walls.
Enough!
Theodore, keep your mouth shut, or I will let Baron Fletcher walk you down to the river.
Baron Fletcher cracks a smile.
Theodore, send out a message to the loyalists in the west to be on the lookout for them. And Baron, let's get some professionals looking for them this time.
I have some, well, off-the-books units out there. Elite Black Ops soldiers. I'll contact them.
Let's get this cleaned up immediately. Bring me back their heads. If you'll excuse me, I must inform the council that the archives team may be out there digging up old skeletons and taking out council soldiers.
May shifts to her werewolf form and runs off into the night, with her Wendigo trailing her.
So, convinced yet?
Bit of an understatement.
Are we gonna go find this Anders guy?
Probably should.
David and Melissa, covered in blood, stand there for a few awkward seconds.
So you were, like, just lopping heads off there. Like, no big deal.
Let's go find Anders.
David and Melissa walk towards the council guard's transport.
We should go on foot. They'll be looking for these.
David searches the transports for supplies and finds a little synth. They pack it up and head west.
I wonder if there's a secret underground at O'Hare, like in Denver. I bet that's where Anders lives.
Or he's got a palatial estate right on the tarmac. Probably a bunch of 747s hooked together.
Man, I can't even remember what it was like to fly.
Probably because it was freaking terrifying and the worst thing ever.
Yeah, I agree. Flying at 30,000 feet in a toothpaste tube with 200 other people hacking and coughing was not the greatest memory.
You know what they say? Once you go monster, you never fly again.
David and Melissa make it to the outskirts of the once crowded airport, now an overgrown airplane graveyard. They spot a light from what seems to be a fire.
Think that's our guy?
Worth checking out, I suppose.
They walk through the overgrowth toward the fire. They hear rustling in the distance and stop immediately.
You hear that?
Yeah, probably just some wildlife, right?
Sounds big.
Let's keep moving. Whatever it is, it'll probably steer clear of the fire.
David's eyes widen.
Sure.
They marched on towards the campfire, and for a moment the rustling was gone. About 30 yards from the fire, David started to speak softly.
So how should we handle this? With Anders, or whoever is over there?
Melissa responds just as softly.
We'll just introduce ourselves and tell him the story. Tell him we know May, etc.
Oh, don't etc. me. We are going to sound like crazy people. Hi. Yeah, we just killed a whole bunch of High Council guards, and this is all their blood. Why do you ask? Oh, because we are writing this history book, and we got...
Yeah, it sounds crazy when you say it out loud.
Oh, and your friend May and her pet Wendigo helped us. Total bloodbath. Mind if we join you by the fire?
Before they know it, they're just 10 yards from the fire. The rustle is back closer and louder. In the darkness, they see a set of eyes, glistening from the glow of the fire. Its deep, guttural growl breaks the silence in the night air. David and Melissa take a few fast paces towards the fire, and the beast cuts them off, now visible in the light of the fire.
Great.
Frozen in fear, David and Melissa stare at the 1,500-pound grizzly bear. A large, broad-shouldered man gets up from the campfire and walks up to stand next to the grizzly. The man scratches the bear behind his ear.
Who's a good boy? You're a good boy.
The man, standing nearly a foot taller than David, continues to pet the grizzly.
I'm Melissa, and this is my colleague, David. We are looking for Anders. May sent us.
He's right. You do look like crazy people.
Wait, you heard all that?
Anders tugs on his earlobe.
600-year-old shapeshifter hearing.
Wow.
Miner, it's okay, boy. They're okay.
Miner slowly walks over and curls up by the fire.
Let's join him, but first...
Anders plops down a giant bucket of water and some rags.
Clean yourselves up a bit, yeah. You look like shit, and I could smell the blood a mile away.
David and Melissa clean up a bit, then join Anders by the fire. They sit down and are a little anxious as they sit in the shadow of Anders' huge body.
So I got the gist from your little gab session earlier, but... What does May think I can help you with anyway?
Well, we send our reports and interviews for the Archives Project to the High Council on the OmniWeb. But we kept getting these weird messages telling us to go to Wrigley Field. May got the same messages. And then we got ambushed by Council guards.
So, we think maybe someone was playing matchmaker?
Mm-hmm. They wanted you to meet May.
She said if we wanted to see this through, to come find you.
Also, something about the blind eye?
Anders laughs.
I haven't heard that in a long time.
Melissa sits up eagerly.
Can you help us?
Yeah, I'll help you. Get some rest. We'll head out in the morning.
David and Melissa pass out by the campfire as the day catches up with them. They instinctively wake just before the sun rises. Anders is packing his supplies and he nods in the direction of two horses he procured while they slept.
Now, I know they are not as luxurious as what you're used to, but a whole lot more discreet. No more visits to the OmniWeb hubs either. They'll be crawling with council guards. How much synth do you have?
A week's worth. Two, if we stretch it.
They picked you up some clothes, too. Should fit over your anti-UV gear and you'll blend in better.
Thanks.
David and Melissa slip on their new disguises.
How about chips? You'll probably have to buy synth out there.
Yeah, we have a bit left over.
Okay, good. But we'll need more. We'll head to the Badlands first.
What's in the Badlands?
The bone collectors.
I can't wait!
David laughs. David, Melissa, and Anders gather their gear and walk towards the pair of massive Clydesdales.
Rusty, Billy, meet David and Melissa.
They start packing their gear.
Wait, where's yours?
Oh, it's fine. I have a ride.
Let me guess. Miner?
Anders laughs.
No, that's funny. It's his big brother, Major.
He whistles and the 2,000-pound grizzly comes charging their way. It stops a few feet from Anders. The giant grizzly lays flat on his belly. Anders scratches Major behind his ears and climbs up onto the giant's saddle.
That's a good boy. You ready to go for a walk, yeah? Miner will scout ahead. We'll go until the animals get tired and then camp. Stay sharp. You're a long way from Kansas.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed tonight's episode. Tune in next week for Chapter 8, The Berserker. If you like what you heard, please consider giving us a good rating. Check out our Facebook page, Psychic Elephant Radio. For more content, please visit our Patreon. Opening theme song by Pygmy Moose. All content property of Psychic Elephant Radio.